You come for the gains and you stay for the money. And that the money means more than just the increase in purchasing power. But this whole idea of self-custody changes, is like the first paradigm shift in humanity. I don't really believe there are many paradigm shifts, like ever. And in a way, this is. And so at a minimum, it could not go up in price. And we've gleaned so much from this, just in terms of ideation, but also like an asset that can't be taken from you. Even if it's like worth less to the state or whatever, or mainstream economics.
This week, we are diving into the mysteries of the Bitcoin universe with the host of the Bitcoin Matrix podcast, Cedric Youngelman. We are diving into questions around early events in the history and evolution of Bitcoin and the broader trends that are playing out in the Bitcoin ecosystem today. I hope you enjoy. All right, welcome to another episode of the Block Reward podcast. This week, we are joined by special guest, host of the Bitcoin Matrix podcast, Cedric Youngelman. Cedric, welcome to the show.
Oh, man. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to get into it with you. Always chatting with you is a lot of fun.
Yeah, we met maybe like a year and a half ago now, and have been chatting on and off since. And it's always a pleasure. Appreciate you coming on to join us. And you've been at this a long time. I thought it might be interesting, actually, to just start with your own personal Bitcoin origin story and the genesis of the Bitcoin Matrix.
Sure. I'll try to give like the medium length version, and you could kind of either prompt me or push me in any direction. But, I think that for me, my Bitcoin journey truly started in 2016. When I got really confused by what was going on in the world. Confused is not maybe the right word, but I was really interested again in geopolitics and Trump's election. I just thought it was odd. It was very divisive. And even just like mentioning to people that he might win would like really irritate people. They made you feel like they thought you were rooting for him or a supporter. And like someone from New York, I just thought he was like this kind of like real estate con man, reality TV star, and kind of weird that like that would be someone who would be president, you know, and he seemed like really corrupted. Well, Craig, you just couldn't be in New York real estate and not be corrupt, you know? So I guess I was on Facebook at the time, and Facebook was just like, it just sucked. It was like this void of anything interesting. And so I ended up on Twitter in 2016 or 2017 early. And I put that in my Bitcoin story because just being on Twitter is when I started like seeing toxic maximalists like come into my feed. I think I really remember like Heavily Armed Clown. And it's just this really odd, you know, like you're getting economics sort of hot takes from, you know, a clown with guns. And you're trying to discuss this with people in your real life. Like there's this guy on the, you know, the Twitter, and he's named Heavily Armed Clown. And he said, you know, well, you know, 1971, you know, everything changed. And the way they would talk, I would kind of like want to either be interested in what they're saying, but also kind of refute it. Because like when people talk in such sort of grand absolutes and maximalism and sort of, you're like, oh, wow, like I could probably tear that argument apart pretty quick because the way they phrased it, like I could just find one piece of evidence that destroys the whole thing, right? And so I just started getting really interested in like, and I've probably seen Bitcoin Twitter stuff because I was probably getting interested in FinTwit. I have a background in finance, economics, accounting. And I was trying to figure out like, not just what's going on in the world, but like, what do you do and play defense, right? Like how do you manage your affairs? I mean, in our economy, you have to spend like 30% of your time managing your like portfolio. Which is either, you know, you just set it and forget it with your 401k or you do some stuff on yourself. But really, at the end of the day, all that is like you're trying to recreate money. You're just like, how do I maintain and increase my purchasing power and create a basket of goods that would actually be what money would be, right? Because I can't use the money. And so I don't want to speculate. I want to invest. I want to save. And so how do you do that, you know, in the market? So anyway, I started seeing like the price of Bitcoin just like race, you know, probably in the fall of 2017. So I was just really intrigued. And for the first time in my life, I was like, wow, like maybe I should speculate on something like this. You know, the way I couldn't refute any of the arguments that were coming across my Twitter feed. And so that made me, and some of these things were like Bitcoin to the moon, you know? So I was like, oh, I know nothing about this thing, very little. But it's just so compelling. And if it's like 10% of what any of these people are saying, and I can't refute any of what they're saying really in total, maybe they're onto something, you know? And then for 6 weeks. I felt like a genius. I bought, you know, what did I buy? 25 million sats, a quarter of a Bitcoin. And then I bought them on Coinbase, and my money took time to move the money, my ACH. Price of Bitcoin like went up like 50%. So I couldn't buy a whole Bitcoin. So that's when I started like, and Coinbase had Ethereum and Litecoin, and they were so cheap. And I was like, wow, you know, these are being positioned as like-minded assets, right? So, and I hate Coinbase for this in a lot of ways, but they're like, well, these things are kind of, you know, maybe one's your digital gold, one's your digital oil, you know, these kind of memes were floating around. So I bought a few of those, and those actually did better in the first, you know, at the end of 2017 percentage-wise than Bitcoin. So, and then they all crashed eventually. You know, so you go on the whole journey of, you know, you think you're a genius, you're telling everyone you're a genius, and then, you know, you're a fool, and, you know, now you're stuck in the position of, you know, do I sell the remainder of this and take the big L? Do I hold it? Do I learn more about it and acquire more if everything was true? As if this is, you know, like, if you learn about cycles and markets and sort of, you know, sort of S-curve adoption and how early we are with Bitcoin adoption. You're like, well, if everything still stands true, but we're just in a cycle here, maybe this is the real opportunity, right? And this, and I started shitcoining and looking at all the white papers. And so I thought it was technology at first. I thought blockchain was the secret sauce. And that was what was going to be used in everything to be this great database for no trusted third party to do like reconciliations or have like sort of like a ledger for everything. So, you know, that was, I mean, that was a long ramble, I guess. But that was the beginning, the end of 2017, you know, the big boom bust. What do you got left here? And then the journey really began, you know, listening to podcasts and doing all the learning and finding out that it's really Bitcoin, not shitcoin.
It's great. You know, like there's a bunch of threads there that I would love to step on, digital oil and the everything blockchain.
That was fun for a while.
I mean, digital oil may be one of the most confusing grifts that is still being pitched today about ETH, and it's wild to see.
Well, you have to stick around long enough to see the ETH grift change, right? Because it's really just a giant affinity scan. Like, at one, you know, a light bulb moment for me was like, wait a minute. Vitalik sold, and I think Vitalik's bullshit. I think he's a front. I don't think he's the boy genius everyone thinks he is, and I don't think he did anything here.
Yeah, he's like the Elon of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and Elon's the big whatever front of whatever the technocratic thing is going on. But yeah, so I feel like the light bulb moment was like Vitalik sold the ETH for Bitcoin. So it was like, wait a minute. Like, he just wants your Bitcoin. He just found a way to buy you, to get your Bitcoin and issue, you know, a shitcoin for it. And that's a brilliant scam in a lot of ways. I think that whole team has to keep it going and let it crash and burn as slowly as possible so they don't go to jail. So, but yeah, no, I mean, just that was an interesting journey, looking at blockchains, other white papers, trying to figure out, like, for me, it was like really trying to boil this down to the realization that this is about money. And that, you know, you come for the gains and you stay for the money. And that the money means more than just the increase in purchasing power. But this whole idea of self-custody changes, is like the first paradigm shift in humanity. There aren't, I don't really believe there are many paradigm shifts, like ever. And in a way, this is. And so at a minimum, it could not go up in price. And we've gleaned so much from this, just in terms of ideation, but also like an asset that can't be taken from you. Even if it's like worth less to the state or whatever, or mainstream economics, but at least we could even have circular economy in that way, a true circular economy that can't be interfered with. So once you start to like realize that, and then you realize like blockchain is like just a really slow database, and that it's like stupid to then use this for anything besides non-monetary transactions, it almost becomes infuriating. But you have to have like I understanding that like that's a lot to learn about. I mean, for me, like, especially like, I was someone with a finance, economics, accounting background, steeped, and I didn't know it, in Keynesian economics. Like, I just went to university and took economics, and, you know, I didn't necessarily like agree with everything, but like they didn't point out I was learning Keynesian economics. They just called it economics. Like, it's kind of weird that we call it Austrian economics. I find like that's like almost like discounting it. Like, it's just economics. It's just like a better way of looking at it. right? This is a better school of economics. Yeah. And it's like, it's like a degradation to say, like, do you know anything about Austrian economics? Like, well, I don't know. What's that? It's weird. Like, no, it's just economics performed better, you know, making it a little harder. And so instead of like, it's such a soft science. So, yeah, I mean, there's just so much to unpack there. And that's a lot. I mean, yeah. And then so much of it is about like sovereignty and like freedom, which goes so goes beyond the money and the gains part.
Yeah. And it is such a deep rabbit hole. And this is something I've experienced my own podcasting because of the nature of podcasts and in trying to keep it interesting and different week to week. You talk to all kinds of people who have different specialties in the various niche subjects within Bitcoin, and you kind of end up getting a very holistic education, I guess, on the many facets of how it works. And that's been a really cool and unexpected. I didn't realize that was going to happen. You know, as a cool, like, secondary effect of just trying to do this. And go ahead.
I mean, learning is fun. And I think as you get older, like, people kind of, like, wanting to stop learning because school sucks and the education system sucks. And, like, you're like, I think that gets associated with learning. And Bitcoin kind of reinvigorated my passion for learning, but also, like, my passion for saying or standing up for what I believe in. So before Bitcoin, so many conversations would be, you know, he said, she said, in the sense that, like, you know, I'd be like, you know, well, the clouds do look weird. People would be like, ah, that's stupid. You know, you're stupid. And you kind of have like, and you kind of have to leave it at that because, you know, unless you start citing papers and who wrote the papers and corporate science, like, there's just, with Bitcoin, it's math. So I could say, oh, you know, there's this money now that's just better currency and it's a better asset. And people say, ah, that's stupid. And it's like, no, it's not stupid. It's math. And you can't, we can't argue about this. Like, it's not something that I can't, like, I just know you haven't done the work. Everything else was sort of like, we can have an argument about it because so many things have just been corrupted. But so it, like, it reinvigorated like critical thinking too, but also just like going back to the things that I questioned and saying, no, there's something there and we could probably prove it. Because for the first time, we have something we can really prove here.
Yeah. You know, and this is where you mentioned paradigm shift. And I think that like one of the paradigm shifts that Bitcoin represents is this idea of like, it's a buoy for reason. You know, like if we can agree on the sensibility of one thing, then that should be like a pathway for us to find other ways to agree around reasonable assumptions of other things. And then that way, you know, I think it becomes this foundation for like a reasonable society. I think, you know, and your point around, it's just math. It's like the, one of the biggest mistakes I think people, it's fair to say people make about Bitcoin is confusing an opinion with an understanding. You know, it's because the rest of investing is opinions. You know, how bullish are you on this management team? What do you think about this industry, this technology? How high do you think this X, whatever, the likelihood of a war? It's like that gets mixed up with how well do you understand this innovation? And what does this innovation represent in terms of these other things you're talking about? Our ability to, you know, reimagine what ownership of property looks like. What is the value of a universal, uncensorable money that is accessible to everyone in the planet?
But it also relieved like I had a lot of angst around, you know, do you climb the corporate ladder? Do you do something entrepreneurial? What do you do with your vocation, your time? And everywhere I looked, I think Joe Burnett really boiled this down well in his report around your wealth is melting. Entrepreneurialism is brutal because as soon as you do find something that's 10x better than anything else there out there, like your competition is going to arise and come for you. And you're going to have to pivot. And it's a constant game of pivoting and financialization to stay alive. And to your point, like, so you know, you could open up a bar and they could take away your liquor license. That's going to screw you. But you could be right about everything. You could open up a bar and the mayor, you know, takes whatever, like you have fashion risk with location, crowds, all of it, security risk, like one thing could go wrong. You can get robbed. Whereas with Bitcoin, if you know how to use it, no other human can mess it up for you. I don't mean it's purchasing power in the future, but I mean, no one can take it from you. No one can issue more. Like you were saying, like you could be right about Amazon stock. Like, oh, I think this business is tremendous. They're going to move into China, but then China says, no, you're not going to come do business here. Jeff Bezos could be caught on camera getting a blowjob, and the stock could take an emotional hit, right? And your wealth is at risk, right? Because of nothing you did or was wrong, or the business plan was great, but now human risk, right? Counterparty risk, all these things. So for the first time, you could acquire something. And if you do want to, I think you can save in Bitcoin. That's like your first 5 or 10%. Of your wealth. You can invest in Bitcoin. This is like 10 to 50% of your wealth. And you could speculate on Bitcoin. You could do all three if you're like 65, 80% of your wealth in Bitcoin, because you're, I think at that point, you're hoping to retire early, right? You're trying to rent seek or speculate on your early adoption or knowledge of this asset class, right? But take that all aside, like no one can screw it up or come between you and the thing. And you can be right, and no one can take that away from you or interfere. No human can make the mistake. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, I think there's something interesting, though, is that is Bitcoin perfect? So I think it's perfect scarcity, like Jesse Meyer says, but maybe Bitcoin's not perfect yet in the sense that it's software and it's still alive and growing and evolving. And so there's still, I think, a lot of risk that it doesn't become everything we hoped it becomes or hope it becomes, like kind of like the internet. And I think that's what I'm feeling a lot in this year, because I feel like maybe there's a lot of room for Bitcoin to be captured or used and deployed in different ways. And I think if it doesn't get used as money, we lose a lot of what we're talking about here. Not so much in terms of like debasement or issuing, you know, like that's the thing too, is like Amazon or Tesla, like these people can issue stocks, they can issue debt and debase your individual piece of the pie. So I'm not saying that changes, but, you know, does it become more like gold? And I say that in a not nice way, where it's like state captured and it's not really used as money anymore. Bitcoin is 100 million times better than gold. So it has all the potential in the world to solve and, you know, beat those issues or problems, but will it? And will humanity use it that way? And will we have, you know, will there be a lot of, because there might be a lot of apathy for how it's used and how it's regulated. And I don't know, that's a lot there.
Yeah, I mean, like yesterday, I think there was an empty block. And like, here we are, right? Like record number of buyers, theoretically, and we're having empty blocks. And I think about it, you know, there's another diagram that gets used a lot that shows sort of the three S curves. And the first one that happens is store value, and then medium of exchange and unit of account. And they're sort of like three S's side by side. So as the store value S curve adoption is going vertical, the medium of exchange is like just starting its uptick. And I wonder, you know, and I don't know the answer, because I agree with you. I think that like it does seem like this sailor cycle, the summer of corporate adoption, which is going on now. We're talking about this off air before we got started. You could argue that what we're seeing is the S curve of store value. And maybe that does have to happen before we start to see the next wave of.
I think that's only a result of measuring things in fiat.
Sure.
So I think Bitcoin is like all, like the way you could save, invest, or speculate on Bitcoin, and one person could do all three, and people could do different things. Like one person could be like, I'm just speculating on this thing. One person could be like, I'm using it as a savings account. One person like, I invest in Bitcoin. Right now, like I can use Bitcoin as a store of value. I can use it as a unit of account, like when I buy a house or a car, or, you know, maybe not when I pay my electric bill as much. Maybe I don't do the math down to that level, but I don't use it as a mean exchange that much. But there are people who probably use it as only a medium exchange. They get paid in Bitcoin, they spend in Bitcoin, and the store value part is almost irrelevant to them. I mean, it'll unless they measure it in the fiat world when they go into that economy. And they're probably always using it then as a unit of account. So I think it's all three at once. It's just like how we measure it and emotionally feel about it. And one person, well, it's this phase first, and it's this phase second. And there's some maybe like rational thought to that, because like that's how we think about things. But I think that's only because we're measuring it in fiat too. And I think like we have to, and we is like a strong word here. It's not like I'm not trying to give anyone advice, or like, but like people, if people thought about Bitcoin as its own thing, and or like as its own unit of account. So it's like at some, and I think it's easier probably for people who've been in it longer. But at some point, you know, like there are people who are like, I'm waiting to spend my Bitcoin when I get a 10x. I'm waiting for 100x. And that's like a form of like almost like rent seeking or very fiat minded, right? And it's like, well, if you're being productive and you've already gotten a 10x on your Bitcoin, and then you it goes down to an 8x and you want to buy that house, like, are you really not living your life for that 2x? Like, it's just your money. Just use it as money. Like, I want to go buy the house. And I think the more we think like that, the more that's how we take down the old system. And rather than just integrate or, you know, with the old system or... Because I think the old system's looking to use Bitcoin as their raft. There's their buoy to, you know, continue to dollarize the world. And so... You know, maybe they want to build on top of Bitcoin too. And then there's Bitcoin's for enemies, so they get to. But it'll be interesting how many people who want to live outside the system put their capital in the old system so that the old system can use Bitcoin as the base. Do you see this? Like if your Bitcoin's on an exchange or in an ETF, then like the old system gets to live longer on the Bitcoin. Whereas if you have it in cold storage, and use it like when you need to buy stuff or whatever, then like that system shrinks and goes away.
Yeah, like if you want to use your Bitcoin as collateral so that you can buy a house, but the trade-off is you have to custody your Bitcoin with the bank.
Right. And so then you're just you're giving them the lifeblood and you're losing all the qualities of Bitcoin that come with it besides the purchasing price appreciation in fiat terms, which will always be there because they'll always be making more of it. So like that was an interesting fact that I heard. It's cost the United States government 7 cents to issue a $100 bill. And they have a monopoly on that as far as they can push it with guns. They're not giving, that's like the best business in the world. Like you think about every, like supermarkets operate on like 1% to 2% profit margin, right? And there were people fighting to get into that business and chains are constantly dying and other ones are buying them and saying, hey, I'll live off 1-2% if I can scale that thing. You know, it's a good business. It's tough, but, you know, and you always have competition. But imagine having a 99.7% profit margin.
Yeah, I mean, and like the really crazy part is that's not even the government. That's the Federal Reserve Bank.
Right, right. It's not even the government. Right, 100%, 100%. I'm conflating things for sure. You know, but they need someone to buy the treasuries, and that's the whole stablecoin thing. And it seems, yeah, it's just very interesting. And so it also seems interesting. It seems like the big thing in this cycle is the Bitcoin treasury companies, which seems like if you boil that down, that's probably Bitcoiners seeding these companies with Bitcoin. And then these companies then trying to basically lever up that capital base with equity and debt. And then, but the shareholders are last in line in the case this thing blows up. And so like, and they're saying, okay, so the first people are saying like, here, babysit my Bitcoin. And the second people are like, here's my fiat, my hard earned money, and go buy Bitcoin on my behalf and babysit it for me. And like the whole point of those treasury companies to me would be, like we were kind of talking about a little bit off air, is like if you already, like I would love for, you know, Dr. Smith, who's a dentist, to take his positive cash flow and put it in Bitcoin, that boom, Bitcoin treasury company. No, he's a dentist that saves cash flows in Bitcoin. That to me is much more, it's boring from a financialization sense, but it's much more exciting from how Bitcoin would be being used. Rather than in the current environment with the MNAV and everyone levering up.
Yeah, help me juice up my pump and dump. Like, let me use Bitcoin to put this thing on steroids.
Sure, and somehow get yield better that than just holding regular Bitcoin. That would be, it's one thing, I think, if these companies were truly, and maybe a company like Metaplanet is, I don't know how much of their capital base is truly people trapped in the Japanese economy. You know, maybe they have money in their, I think, I feel what they're planning, like a NISA plan or something, like in their retirement fund. And if they take it out, they get, you know, huge penalty. So they it's in there. They buy spot Bitcoin, I've heard they're taxed at like 50%. So through these companies, they could be taxed as low as like zero. So there is financial arbitrage in these capital markets, but it seems like most of these Bitcoin treasury stock companies are being powered by retail excitement, not necessarily, you know, pension companies lining up to get spot exposure.
Metaplanet is a particularly interesting one to me. I saw a news story last week saying that the Japanese government was considering ending that capital gains, punitive capital gains on spot Bitcoin. So like, what happens to the value of the Metaplanet?
Right. I saw that arbitrage. Right. And the capital that's flowing in because of that situation. And that's almost like the competition I was talking about. The entrepreneur sees that angle and then the government moves in and says, we're going to take that from you. Right. And I'm not saying what the government should or shouldn't do. And I think the government should do less. All governments, but it is a threat from your sort of like your fiat mining. It's interesting. I almost see those as like those companies. They're like, to me, that's fiat mining companies. So they're not like the dentist. He's mining, you know, his dentist work. He's like, I'm a dental miner. This is how I make my money. And then I just want to convert it to Bitcoin when I get reserves. But these companies are like, how do we go attract fiat and mine it and turn it into Bitcoin? So it's like a Bitcoin fiat miner, not like a Bitcoin miner who like has hash power and runs computers. That's like a pure Bitcoin miner. This is like a Bitcoin fiat miner.
Yeah, like a hammer and chisel, a virtual hammer and chisel.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I do see scenarios where I just don't know what the probability is, but I see, you know, non-zero probabilities of them acquiring enough of this capital base and the capital base going up enough in value that this becomes, or, you know, sort of like something that then they could deploy that capital in different ways. Or, you know, at some point though, I think they have to do something beyond just acquire the Bitcoin.
Yeah. I saw this, and I was a Game of Thrones guy, and maybe a month ago, Max Kaiser made a tweet saying that, Saylor has built the Iron Bank. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. You know, like but even MicroStrategy, presumably at some point, I mean, they have already started to do some innovative things. I think they are unique in that treasury space with the different types of products, the financial engineering they're doing. But I presumably at some point, this has to continue to evolve. And Saylor's always using the analogy of land development, you know, real estate companies first buying the land and then eventually, you know, developing the land. And yeah, I'll be interested to see where that goes over the next 5 or 10 years.
Let's take the real estate example though, right? So you're saying, okay, I'm going to borrow money from my investors. We're going to raise some debt. We're going to go build some houses. And we're going to, because like right now, houses are selling like hotcakes. And we're going to build these houses for people. People love houses. If they stop loving houses, like we'll just build apartment buildings, right? Like, so now it's like people love apartment buildings, especially when they don't like houses. And so some people like would never live in a house. Like we have some older people, they don't want to live in a house and have all that landscaping work. They love a 2-bedroom condo. And so we'll build apartment buildings. And then, you know, when that's not going well, we'll do like seaside hotels. And then, but there's some point where like real estate crashes 50% and all your customers are like, I don't want anything. Like there's no offering here that I want. It's not debt or like, if you're, this is what I worry about. And this is not specific to strategy, but if you're building this capital base of assets and then you're raising your leverage and you keep buying the asset at a higher price, and you're at some point, you know, you could be 15% levered now. At some point, you could be 35% levered. At some point, you could be 50% levered. If then this asset crashes 50%, you're 1-to-1. And at some point, if it goes below, you're in a spiral where the only thing you have to sell is either the asset that's crashing that you built your base on, right? So you're selling the Bitcoin to save your share price. And now so you're adding to the fire sale. Or the other way, you sell, you say, okay, I'll sell my share price to buy the thing that's crashing and save the Bitcoin price. But now you're kind of hurting your shareholders. And either way, so if you can get a 2x or 10x or 20x on the way up, I just feel like, how do you not get a 2x, 10x or 20x on the way down? You know, and so how is that sustainable unless you don't get the major drawdown? And so then we go back to, like, if this is a thing that is a good use of finance and that some people can pull it off, so maybe not everyone. So then you're back to betting on which team can pull this off, which team would survive the black swan event that we can't imagine is coming, right? And so then it's like you're back to a lot of human risk and counterparty risk and all the things that, to all what? To get something called what? Bitcoin yield per share? But there's no yield in Bitcoin. So what are you getting? I think that these things can outperform, anything can outperform Bitcoin over a short period of time. Right. Maybe even a long, like, depends on what your definition of short. Maybe 18 months is not short to you. Maybe that's a long period of time. That's short to me. 3 years is short to me. Right. But like 5 years is like very few things can outperform Bitcoin over 5 years. I don't know about 10 years yet. I mean, we don't have a long tail here yet either. You know, we only have three cycles, you know, so there's no guarantee that there'll be cycles and major drawdowns in the future. But I think, you know, as Bitcoiners, we have to really contemplate what we're doing with our Bitcoin. I think a lot of Bitcoiners might have been, you know, found themselves in a situation where they had a small, and again, use the word small here liberally, had some money trapped in the traditional system. And maybe in that vehicle, they couldn't buy GBTC, or maybe they did buy GBTC back in the day. And then they were like, I don't like GBTC anymore. And somehow they ended up on like Strategy, and that small amount of money, again, define that any way you want, turned into a much larger amount of money. And I think a couple things here is one, so I think that's like, wow, like this thing has done well for a lot of people. So they feel a lot of goodwill. That doesn't guarantee future performance though. And then I think a lot of Bitcoiners, like, to be honest, like I think those securities made their wives and or husbands or kids or parents feel better. Like, oh, like now you have this value in stocks, and I don't have to worry about keys and security and you know, so like, I think there's like a lot of reasons that this has gone well. Just, I don't, and there's a lot of reasons it can continue to go well. This is not financial advice, but I think there's a lot of reasons to consider like what you're doing with your wealth. Even if something has done well for you in the past, like maybe now is the time to convert that to Bitcoin. And there's nothing wrong with that, in my opinion, you know? So I don't know. It's going to be interesting how it plays out. I think there's a lot of smart people, you know, in that space. Some of the smartest people I've listened to. Again, like, I try to like focus on ideas, not people. But there's some really smart cats, you know, operating these companies. So it's definitely, you know, something to listen to and think about from both sides.
One of the other trends that I think, you know, you were saying that, you know, one of the trends right now is Treasury. Another one definitely seems to be state adoption, in the sense of, like, you know, Texas Reserve. There have been a lot of different jurisdictions sort of move forward, like, globally. And yeah, it's interesting to me to see these things happening at the same time. And what are your thoughts on what's going there?
As someone who's like lives in America, the notion of America buying Bitcoin or holding onto Bitcoin, or municipalities sort of restoring their balance sheet, it's kind of interesting and exciting. But I think this whole, like, it doesn't mean I have to yearn for it or want it or think it's good. And I think all of these things end up, if you just kind of keep going after the first step, all of these just appear to me, these are centralizing forces. So the government's obviously a centralizing force. So more government entities buying Bitcoin is a centralizing factor. All the stocks buying Bitcoin centralizes it on what seems like a few exchanges and or government or, you know, huge entity operations. So that's a huge centralizing factor. And then that just makes me, the question prompts me to think of like something like, not a digital 6102, you know, so like, you map this out 5-10 years and now the government has 4.7 million Bitcoin or 1.9 million Bitcoin. And all they have to do is say, you know, it's been hacked. The North Koreans have all our Bitcoin. They stole Texas's Bitcoin. They stole North Carolina's. They stole New York's. They stole Coinbase's. These hackers got in at once at 4 a.m. The cameras were off. The Bitcoin's gone. You know, and then, you know, they could say they could handle this so many ways, but you could just, and I'm just gaming it out in the worst ways possible. I'm not saying this is highly probable, but like then they say, you know, there's a huge, they say we're going to, you know, print money. They don't say that, but we're going to give out the money to restore everyone's fiat balance at that point in time. So now basically there's a huge government Bitcoin of a huge government bailout of Bitcoin and indirect Bitcoin holders, which is terrible for the ethos of Bitcoin. Price of Bitcoin is crashing. It's your Bitcoin's gone that you had in third parties. Yours not being used, God, by anyone. And then a year later, they recover the Bitcoin. Right? I mean, it was like, we found it. Like we went in there at 5 a.m. when their cameras weren't on. We got all our Bitcoin back minus like three of them. We're so lucky. You know? And so that's not them coming to your house and knocking on your door or telling them to give you your self-custody Bitcoin or, you know, and that's on top of, though, them saying, you know, now that the North Koreans have stolen all our Bitcoin and this is a national strategic reserve asset, you know, you as a retailer, you know, consumer shouldn't be holding institutional nuclear grade monetary munitions, you know, like that's way above your pay grade. And you're un-American if you want to hold on to your Bitcoin. And if you do, we want you to tell us exactly how much you have and how you're holding and securing it. And if we find out that you're, you know, because it's, didn't you buy your Bitcoin in cold storage at Coinbase or River or Swan? So show me sale of XYZ or show me it in your self-custody or tell me where it is and how much you have. And that's not a world I want me and my kids to live in. Right. And so I think the more Bitcoin they have access to, or, and I use that word access very widely here, but like anything that's in a third party, I consider them having access to or being able to put a tremendous amount of pressure on. Well, that's just more leverage in their hands to be deployed in any way. Maybe it's just to extend the dollar. Maybe that's just to dollarize, you know, future colonies. Or maybe that's to, you know, put pressure on us. I don't know. So yeah, I'm not like, it's like a weird place. It's a weird space where you go to the biggest conferences and it's about stable coins. I mean, this, you know, government reserves are the two biggest and Bitcoin treasury companies. And all these things might be inevitable or a natural evolution, but they're not like about sovereignty, freedom, and, you know, fuck the state.
Yeah. You know, I've been interested, like, so I came class of 2020, and you get the understanding that, like, the earlier times in Bitcoin, you know, like when the block size wars is going on, there was, at least for some people, a genuine concern that, like, the entire thing could have ended then. And the younger Bitcoin was, you know, I've talked in my travels to people who were basically around from almost the very start. And at that time, you know, there's almost no track record and, you know, no one had any idea how durable this thing was going to be, how enduring. And so they're, you know, at that time, imagining, you know, what does 10 years look like? We're at 15. You've been around for 10.
Not 10 yet. No,
not 10 yet. Nine.
No, I think I'm on my seventh or eighth year, which feels like 10 or 80 years, but I'm not that nice round number.
Yeah. So it's just kind of like, you know, I guess part of it is this, it's not going to turn out however it's going to turn out. It probably won't be how anybody thinks. And yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of the example I use, because you could be, you know, the most steadfast, hardcore Bitcoiner today, and you could amass, you know, a great fortune way beyond, you know, our imaginations here, maybe. And, you know, I liken it to something like maybe like Kurt Cobain. I've used this before. I hope it's not tired, but it's like, you know, Kurt Cobain, you could argue, I mean, you can go down the conspiracy theory rabbit hole, but like, let's just say that he had this ethos and his ethos was like, I would never put my music in a Hyundai commercial type ethos, right? This indie rock, this hardcore, this like rock kind of thing. And, you know, even Hyundai approaches him and he's like, no, don't, I don't want to do that. And then one day, you know, he passes on and his wife sells his catalog, the entire catalog, to a private equity group. and you go to Disney and you're in the elevator and you hear Smells Like Teen Spirit. It's not maybe what Kurt wanted. And I'm saying the ethos doesn't necessarily live on beyond a generation. It's hard to pass an ethos on. So it's like, you know, this Bitcoin children inherit maybe some wealth, and the state says, hey, if you put your coins in the ETF and you sell your shares in the ETF, there's no taxes. You sell your spot Bitcoin, there's 50% taxes. And maybe these kids don't know, and maybe it's the second generation, because you hear this a lot with third family businesses. Really hard to get a business to go three generations. The second generation, you know, saw how hard the first generation worked. The third generation doesn't see that. And they say, hey, we got all these assets. We don't have a lot of liquidity. And I really want I want a yacht. So why don't we sell the business and I'll enjoy the yacht? My kids might won't have a productive asset, right? And the yacht will go down in value and they could sell the yacht for productive assets if they want. But it's not a great, you know, sort of steward of wealth and or maybe ethos. And it's really hard to pass ethos on, you know, and yeah, so it'll be interesting to see over time how that torch gets carried forward. I mean, remember when Lightning came out and everyone passed around a Lightning invoice, you know, and I unfortunately didn't get a node up and running and all that, and then a Lightning node and figure it all out. And I wasn't part of it, but that was like really exciting, that sort of social consensus around even technology, right? Not just sort of the gains. And so it'll be interesting to see how it all evolves.
Yeah, I personally continue to be very interested in Lightning. And I hope it matures into what Lightning Bulls think it could be.
Well, so yeah, I don't have the tech background to really not just even understand what's going on, but then to like prognosticate and see out how this thing can work from a technical standpoint and integrate with new technology and be a financial layer. I talked to Lightning Bulls and they're very bullish on Lightning. I don't know and haven't had the opportunity to talk to many naysayers who are well-versed on Lightning. So there are some naysayers out there and I don't give them a lot of credit because they, you know, I can see what they're picking at and maybe they have good points, but I want to see someone who's a naysayer who understands it better. Well, someone's very interesting right now is that James Chanos guy on Twitter. He's a traditional finance hedge fund guy. He's shorting MicroStrategy right now. He's engaging with all the Bitcoiners on this very topic. It's very interesting. I don't think Bitcoiners are a thing, but something some people do, whether they're Bitcoiners or not, is not always give the other side enough, sometimes credence or credibility on some of the finer points that they can bring to the table. And I think sometimes even people, like I had Eric Balchunas on my show. He's a ETF analyst for Bloomberg. And he says a lot of times he'll like say Bitcoin and crypto. And from his perspective, it's a legitimate use of the term. He's a journalist. He's an analyst. He covers ETFs. Some companies are applying for crypto ETFs. He knows the difference between Bitcoin and crypto, but from his space and his way of using the language, that's very reasonable for him to use the language like that. And some people would tuned out of my conversation with him after 5 minutes because of the he would say Bitcoin and crypto. And they say, it's just Bitcoin. And so they're going to not listen to any of his finer points over an hour. And I think that's what like sometimes like I think my guests, like I try to bring on guests that share interesting ideas. Maybe I agree with those ideas. I usually agree with more of it than I don't. But like once in a while, like I could agree with 100% of everything I've researched about a guest. And they come on and say, you know, I think maybe Monero's interesting. And I don't interrupt them because it's like, am I really going to like ruin the conversation and distract? And when I know and I feel the audience could make the distinction on their own as well, and they don't need me to do the thinking for them. And I don't need to go, but no Monero here, you know, and then interrupt the longer point and everything else they're sharing to like argue over something that's not like they're on the show to talk about ETF. Right. And Monero is not even an ETF yet. And they said Monero. And it's like, we're going to lose the conversation here. And I'm going to ruin the friendship vibe of the conversation so that my audience can hear me stand up to him and correct this person, him or her. You know, and it's like, well, at the same time, we want to destroy the system, but like, can we be civilized? You know, can we engage? Can we maybe learn from others who've been in markets longer than us, and finance, economics, different things? You know, find the synergy.
I mean, and it is kind of that, I guess, it's a negative reflection of what I was saying earlier, this idea that I think as someone who is a strong conviction in Bitcoin, dealing with people who appear not to understand where that conviction comes from because they haven't done the work, then it's like that one thing, that it's the inverse of this, people who don't understand it, confusing an opinion with knowing something. And then for those people who know something or think they know something, yeah, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Yeah, sure. I got one for you. What do you think is the probability Bitcoin was created by the state?
Really high. And I think that I actually think it doesn't matter.
I don't think it matters from a perspective of self-custody, but I think it would matter to me in my understanding of how the state is rolling this out and why certain things are going the way they're going.
I sort of think that like almost everything that happens because it's being allowed to happen.
I would agree. And so then I'm like, how would this get by them? It makes so much sense for them in so many ways. So I love the Satoshi story. It's a big part of my journey. You know, you think about the Immaculate Conception. Was this given to us by some outside power? Is this a gift to humanity? Would that change if humanity created it? Probably not. So, but then like the rational side of my brain is like, no human could have no digital footprint in the 21st century. And part of that for me is like, I don't think that Satoshi was a 17-year-old kid, right, on his own. Because like, I just don't think any human could learn enough at such a young age about cryptography, monetary history, Austrian economics, coding by 17. And then I just keep moving that number out. And the lowest number I get to is really around like somewhere in the 30s. Like, unless someone tapped you and said, hey, you're 25, you're the best coder in the world, we need this done here. Not your whole idea. Like, I'm not saying people younger than, maybe it was a group project. So I say, oh, if this person was 35 or 40 or 45 or 50, it would be really hard to not have no trace up to that point and no trace after, especially if they were then living off the wealth they created before Bitcoin.
Yeah, and this is where the only plausible explanation for me that doesn't involve the state is that Satoshi has died.
Sure. Yeah. What a coincidence, though. You know, that's like a, you know, here's the person who is so smart and usually attribute smart. Like, then you say maybe they're probably not fat and overweight and eating Cheetos on their couch. Right. They're just so smart. They jumped in front of a bus 2 days after they released Bitcoin or 2 days after they walked away. And the walked away part was right after Gavin went to the CIA. So like, again, like, it's like, it would have to be like this person was going to have no hint of leaving. Then they leave when Gavin goes to the CIA, and then they just randomly die after that. You know, and you could paint that around Hal, and I don't want to have people to go to Hal's house and bother Hal's wife. And you could say Len Sasserman, you know, different people kind of pop up. But again, I think then even more so, we would, the scrutiny would still be there. And the digital footprints would still be there, I think. Especially if we know the person's name, we know where they live. Now we could just start reconstructing things like telephone. Like, the state would want to know who the fuck created this fucking thing. So this guy died. Let's go through every credit card, every ATM, every known email. They would literally find, like, the story is that they sent cash to get their VPN. Like, they would connect those dots. They would go for where'd the cash come from, what machine, and what VPN, and we're interviewing those people. How many cash customers did you have? Like, tell me, like, I'm sorry, they would be on the case. Like, the only way they don't discover who this human is, if it's more than one human or if it's one human, they know who it is and they don't want it released. That's the only way. Or it's because it's just it's so irrational. My rational brain just keeps finding ways to say no, 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 no. And I think my new pet theory, it's my latest fun that I'm having, strong opinions held loosely. I think they're going to roll Jack Dorsey out as Satoshi.
Interesting. You know what I was just going to say literally while you were talking is, I know who it isn't. It's not Jack Dorsey.
Okay, so Jack, what's interesting about Jack Dorsey, and I just, I don't think it's Jack, but I think they're going to roll Jack out as Jack Dorsey. I think there's enough vague circumstantial evidence that to link him to being a plausible candidate. And I don't think it's implausible that he worked on a piece of it, right? So if it is government created, they do need coders. But if Jack was Satoshi, there's right after Jack became CEO of Twitter, and he's one of the founders, but he went on all these state trips. He went on a state trip to Russia. You're not the guy who created Bitcoin would not do anything with the state. But then what's weird about Jack is he plays this I don't want to say plays, but his costume is homeless guy, hacker extraordinaire, not interested in anything, right? But he's the only one who wears a shirt that says Satoshi.
That's a Simpsons character.
Yeah, but it's I am Satoshi in a way. He's alluding to him. And from what I heard in the Lex Fridman interview, he's the only one who didn't say, I'm not. He said, I'm not going to say I'm not Satoshi. And then there's all this circle around birth dates and everything. So I think that I think it's plausible he had a small piece in it. I shouldn't use the word small. A piece in it. Maybe it was a large piece. And I think that then extends to a way to be that's a bridge to be, it was me. And I think that it would be useful at some point in the state to roll out someone as, the front of the thing. So I don't know. That will probably be provably false within minutes of me saying it, which is great. So then I can move on with my life. But if someone could help me there, but it's interesting to noodle on.
My personal pet theory is that Ready Player One is predictive programming, and that there will be at some point in maybe the 2040s, a treasure hunt for Satoshi's keys. And so I think that story is a foreshadowing.
What about they said, we're gonna audit Fort Knox, and then in the same breath they were like, we're gonna do just a little audit here of the government to see how many sats we have. And I'm sorry, David Sacks is not alluding to them finding 300,000 Satoshis on, the Department of Agriculture's laptop. That audit is not to find 18 Bitcoin or 22 Bitcoin or 500. It's possible. They're we did the audit and we have a million coins. Where's Satoshi? We've had them all along. We don't have to go buy them now, And then to your point, they could do contests. They could do Ready Player One, whatever that is. Or they could even use it as UBI. Here's your sats or here's your dollars backed by our Bitcoin. But wouldn't that be a nifty rollout? It's created by the government and they have the keys to set Satoshi's coins.
I mean, the other way to think about it would be if a single government were to release the hardest money ever invented into the world, that would be the most significant economic weapon. if they...
100%. So it's how you think about it from that perspective. The United States government has already said this is a strategic reserve asset. And yet for the last 4 years, they've let some tiny little company in McLean, Virginia, just coincidentally 15 miles from Langley, just amass several hundred thousand of the most strategic, of a strategic reserve asset. And Japan is just letting Metaplanet accumulate. I mean, Metaplanet's not really material yet, but you get the point. Someone had to get a green light, I think.
Yeah, I mean, a conspiracy theory that I definitely entertain. I think people throughout history have been tapped for, special missions.
I mean, people think it's I love the Elon story. They're the two enemies of the state, a former president, by the way, and Elon Musk, a non-American. They're going to take this pew pew shots at the former president and nick his ear. He's just going to become president again and become insider number one. and we're going to let Elon buy Twitter for peanuts. I mean, $40 billion is nothing in this economy. And let him control the most powerful psychological operation communications tool in the history of mankind. And we're going to pretend that he walked in and fired every 80% of the staff. And it still goes on. And I think it's gotten worse, actually, after that initial, it got better feeling. And then we're going to give him all, we're going to let him have access to everything in the United States government, all its databases, based on, I think, the seeding of he's this great tech efficiency guru with Twitter. This whole false story. And then, so he cut 80% of Twitter and it's better. Let him come in and cut 80% of the government. And we're going to let these two, like the government, who does everything they can to prevent, you know, ostensibly a coup, is going to let these two guys walk in. And then these two guys walk in and do everything opposite of everything they campaigned on. And yeah, I mean, it's just, it's nonsensical. So, and then it's all about stable coins and Bitcoin. Even the Ross thing is just very strange lately, I feel like. I don't know if you want to get into that. I thought his speech was a little off, or a little strange.
Yeah, there's almost like a weird homogenous pressure to like celebrate Ross, regardless of what, you know, like there was a lot.
You speak of like what Satoshi represents, and Ross comes out wearing a red tie for the Republican Party. He built the ultimate marketplace for freedom, to use freedom money, and came out bending the knee to the party in charge, to his captors. Like, I don't know if you want to call it Stockholm syndrome, but like, it's the, I know Ross didn't speak publicly. I have no right or privilege to assume what he would be like, but I'm sorry, it just doesn't fit my, like, oh, the guy who created Silk Road, like doesn't come out and just be like, fuck you, I'm wearing a t-shirt. Like, you know, like, I don't know. And then takes donations through a centralized mixer, like wearing a suit. Like, I don't understand any of it. You know, it just doesn't like, and again, I could be wrong. I'm allowed to be wrong. You know, I'm just questioning things, you know, just trying to be a nonconformist here. Like, what is, like, what would I do in those shoes? What would, not even what would I do? Cause I'm not the kid who was like, let me create Silk Road and, you know, be an anarchist. Like, I'm not an anarchist, but I imagine someone with anarchist principles, like, who goes, like, create something. Like, first of all, like, in his speech, he said, oh, I grew mushrooms because I didn't want to start my website without inventory. So now part of the story is he's a drug producer. Like, this is new, the story for me. He's a drug producer. And he didn't want his landlord to know that he was growing mushrooms. He didn't want his parents to know. But he's going to start this anarchist website. He's worried about what his mom thinks about him growing mushrooms. But he's going to do an anarchist website. And when he gets taken down by the man, he's going to come out and pay tribute to the man. Like, and this is someone who couldn't evade 21st century digital police. So how, like, he went into this after Satoshi and somehow couldn't figure this out, which is strange, because you how would you start this without solving that riddle first, like not getting caught? He didn't want to get caught growing mushrooms. He shows up at the cabin. He's got wasps. Doesn't want to call his landlord because he doesn't want his landlord to find him with supplies to grow mushrooms. But he's going to take on the United. So he knows what he's doing is illegal. So now everything I've heard about him being this nice kid who doesn't want to do anything, like, it's just all of it's not adding up to me anymore. Like, he came out of prison looking younger than Brian Johnson. His hair was perfectly coiffed. His teeth were nicer than, like, any teeth I've ever seen. This is someone who called into Bitcoin Magazine's Vegas to talk to us. And went into the hole for it. And now comes out and is like, yeah, I'll take... Because people say, maybe he had to get out, he had to sign a deal. Well, to get out earlier, he could have not done that phone call in Vegas that he went into the hole for. And you go back to that phone call, because I cried during that. Go back to that phone call and compare it to the Blair Witch Project. Because that phone call is perfectly produced. Like, even at the time, like, I had a little ping in me, like, how did they record the click in the payphone? Like, all of it, you know? And then you look at this, you know, the time, like, you know, I mean, like, how Bitcoiners went to, like, because in my opinion, Bitcoiners got him out of prison, not Donald Trump. There's even the clip of Donald Trump. I don't know how true it is, but it's like, hey, is that the, oh, this is the promise we made? Oh, let's keep the promise. Like, I don't know what I'm talking about here. So we got him out. Not me and you, we. Not anything I did. But what we put into the universe. And for 10 years or 8 years, demanded his freedom at any cost. And there were Bitcoiners. And I use that word. There were people, I should say, who said, I don't want to vote in this election, but I would vote for Ross's freedom. I would be a single issue voter for Ross's freedom. I mean, there's like only a few single issues certain critical thinkers would go into that system because they know their vote doesn't even get counted. There's no fucking audit. Okay. There's no audit trail. There's no paper trail. The vote means nothing. They got us. I'm not speaking for me or you. They got people to vote for someone who's not even doing what he said he's going to do, except for that one thing. He did get Ross out. But Ross didn't come out and thank us. Us being the people who fought to get him out. They thanked the guy who was his prior captor for 4 years and didn't let him out. And shat on Bitcoin for 4 years when he was first president and didn't care about his freedom. Played with him at the end of that. So... And if, like, I don't know, man, like, if that was me, I'd come out fucking guns blazing. Yeah, I got my motherfucking freedom. Yeah, maybe I wouldn't even sign a deal to get out, maybe, because what I gave up to put in the world, like, why did I put it in the world if I was willing to give that all up? I didn't cover my tracks good enough. I knew this was a risk. I mean, who am I taking on here? I'm not taking on the black market of drugs. I'm taking on money. And I'm going to risk all of that. Ostensibly, did I risk it to get people mushrooms or did I risk it to be a freedom fighter? I don't mean a terrorist, you know, and then I give that all up for what, a suit and a cappuccino and some new wife we never heard about? Like, where had that? I don't know, man. And I hope I'm wrong on all of it. I really do. I wouldn't be like hurt. Like, that's what I'm not saying like this to be right and stick to being right. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to question what I'm seeing and what it means. And like, if I'm good, I'd love for Ross to be free and enters or earns, not the right word, to get his freedom. And I'm just misreading the tea leaves. That I'd love for that young kid to be free. I also think it's weird that after 10 years, he hasn't thought anything about AI, VR, or shitcoins to draw any. Like, he got up there and told us, like, we should stand with the shitcoiners and the Web3 people. Because what, did they get him out of prison? I don't remember them going to bat. Like, I don't know what I've thought about it. Like, I don't know what he needs to think about. Like, to give them more, like, I don't know. What does he see? That would be nice to know. He really understood this technology way back when, in a way that I clearly couldn't even grok it as a currency. Much less getting people a circular economy. I mean, this kid's a young kid. He really got all this stuff. So young, maybe he, like, wow, maybe Satoshi could be a young kid. So young. He comes out 10 years later with no pontification. Just let's be open-minded. I don't know. That just didn't seem to add up. I mean, you would think he'd come out with an orange tie. You know, the orange pill. Like, I don't know. It just seemed weird. We haven't heard from his mom at all. I think she's the real deal. I don't question his mom at all. Like, she seems genuine. But yeah, the whole thing's just interesting. Sorry for all that long ramble.
No, question everything, friends.
Yeah, why not? That's one of the things I loved about Bitcoin. Like, question everything, exactly. Like, question inflation, question taxation, question like what it means to be free, what it means to be a slave. You know, like the whole thing, like with Shawshank Redemption, like the freest people could be slaves. and the most enslaved people could be free. And that's sort of a Jewish proverb as well. And so freedom's in your mind, right? Like Tim Robbins is free the whole time they put him in that prison. He's, you know, he finds his freedom. He rock collects, he finds a passion, he figures an escape. He gets beers for his friends while he's there, you know, and then when he gets free, he empowers others. He didn't just go to Santo Antonio and, you know, go hang out with prostitutes and play video games. You know, he got his best friend a ticket, set him up with a map, showed him the way, brought him there, you know. Probably started a life together. I mean, Red gets out of prison and not Red, Brooks gets out of prison and hangs himself, you know? And I think that's part of what we're up against here. There's, I really do think the fiat matrix is like this prison complex. And, you know, I think there's this like way of living in the prison where you're like, oh, if I make enough money at my job, that I get a certain amount of hours a week to be free and I get to spend a certain amount of political currency units, and the purchasing power that of that is dictated by these people who have control over me through that. So they, it's like I get a, you know, hall pass on the weekends and certain amount of allowance, and then you work your whole life to think that at the end, like, you're going to be free then. But now you got like all these health ailments, and you don't have your youthful energy, and you don't have the passion to be creative or to learn or grow, you know. And it's the whole notion of like, when you like that your free time should be as lazy as possible, you know, like, cause work sucks. And the whole notion of work is like being a slave. You don't work for pleasure. You leave that system, and that's the hardest thing in the world to do, to find out you're in the system and then figure out like how to get out. Because the first tools you reach for are all the tools they want you to, that keep you in the system. The mortgage, the car loan, the credit card loan, right? To grow your wealth in the system, you have to take on, the wealthiest people have the most debt. You know, they even like, they buy art and then they borrow against the art because the art will increase at a rate faster than the loan. But every step, there's more and more debt to build that life in that system. You know, and then even if you work your way out of that system, you still spend 30% of your time managing your financial portfolio in that. Because like, imagine you retire in that system, you can't even, like, you retire, everyone figures out there's just some number that you could retire at. You get there, you're like, all right, I got that. I have that many millions. I can't put it in cash. Well, you're back to the Michael Saylor problem of the melting ice cube, like, you know. And then that is what the math is so interesting. It's like, to retire on fiat, you need probably like 5, 10, 50 times the amount of money you need to retire in Bitcoin. Like, I think I could literally walk people through and be like, you're 1/10 on your way to retiring in fiat. Just sell everything you have now, buy Bitcoin with it, buy one less Bitcoin than you planned on, use that to live on, and wait till you could sell another one in another, whatever that period of time is that one Bitcoin buys you. So Bitcoin, one Bitcoin, $100,000 buys you a year. In a year, sell another Bitcoin, regardless what the price is. And you'll probably, you've built a better pension plan, a 401k. Like, so let's imagine you have 10, you're worth $1 million now if you sold your house, your Bitcoin, everything, buy 10 Bitcoin. Actually, you buy 9, you live off one Bitcoin, wait a year, whatever that will get you, and then sell another Bitcoin. If Bitcoin goes anywhere where we think it's going, you will be more than fine on that journey. And this is not financial advice. And maybe you need double that. But my point is, it's way less in Bitcoin terms now than you would think you need in fiat terms now. I don't know. And I think that's pretty freeing. That's a lot of rambling there, but that was in the noodle, I guess.
This is, Cedric, this is great, man. I could do this all day. I am excited to chat with you again. I'm really excited to chat with you off camera. And
fair enough. I want to end on an optimistic note. So the whole point of that is, whatever you've been stacking, even if you just started your journey with 1 million Bitcoin, 1 million sats, that will be enough one day to suffice. And if you have that belief, then how much empowerment that gives you now in the present tense to not worry about the future. And if you just do what you're doing, be productive and add to that. The real point is, if you are truly bullish on Bitcoin, your main goal now should be to secure whatever you have and you and your family and get that amount of Bitcoin into the future. You don't even need any more. That's how much Bitcoin will be worth in the future. And you have to just get there. Don't lever up. Don't whatever. I'm not saying don't do these things. It's not financial advice, but don't lose the sats you have now. And don't die. And don't let anyone you love die and get, you know, as much as you can. Health is wealth too. I don't know. That's my optimistic note. Be bullish. Be present. Be humble.
So it's the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. You're on Twitter. Anywhere else we can send listeners to find you?
Yeah, man. We're on X. We're on YouTube. We're on Rumble. Those are the main spots. We're also doing the Bitcoin Center, or just Bitcoin Center. Live Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern. My co-host is Paul Tarantino, CEO of Byte Federal. We kind of do this every half hour. We run through a bunch of topics, like pardon the interruption, and we just kind of hit on the news for the week and on the trending topics and argue and fight. So that's that. Thank you so much for having me. This has been a real honor.
Yeah, thank you again for coming on. I'm sure we'll do it again. And if you're listening and you made it all the way to the end of the episode, I want to thank you all for tuning in. Hope to see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes. Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. Block Rewards' mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits, supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies, and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and VMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. To Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.